Hello, meat friends. Welcome to Regenerative Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brando Tice, and today Frank and I sit down to discuss some updates about the Meat Institute. We start off the conversation discussing some meat educational courses that are happening at UC Davis and then the transition of Meat Day to the beginning of October. We then shift the conversation towards the 2023 U.S. Meat Open competition that the Meat Institute hosted and put together. Now let's get into it.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm full of many moving parts at the moment. I just got back from Lightning in a Bottle. We got to share meat and give a talk on the Learning Kitchen stage to about 100 people. And took my three daughters to this crazy festival halfway between Coachella and Burning Man. And we got back on Monday. And then Tuesday happened and life kind of reset, and now it's Wednesday and we're here in the morning recording a podcast. So cheers to that.
Cheers. Love it.
Thanks.
Lightning in a Bottle. That's a fun event.
Oh man. Have you been?
No, but I do want to go one day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's an experiment in a creative reality. It's not as radical as Burning Man. Like where money doesn't exist other than your tickets and to buy coffee and ice. Burning Man. That's all you can do with money. Otherwise, it's a gifting economy. And everyone just shows up to share gifts with people. Lightning in a Bottle, there's a ton of art, a ton of creativity. But money is there for food and to buy merchandise and all kinds of things. So it feels more close to our normal reality, even though like the visionary art and the visionary music is definitely there and immersive. I mean, you hear music from 10 a.m. until 4 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Every day.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's intense.
It was awesome. Today we're here to talk about the Meat Institute, though.
Yeah, we are.
Give everyone some updates on where we're at with it and what's going on.
Yeah.
So, what's the update you got for us on the Meat Institute?
A lot of progress at the Meat Institute. 2 weeks ago, we held the first ever U.S. Mead Open. So there have been a number of mead competitions in the United States in the past, but this is the first time that it was an open format. So we called together a bunch of, and it was judged by beverage professionals, not mead, you know, judges and mead nerds who are already immersed in the mead world, as an organization that exists to define and promote quality standards in mead across the country and set them for hopefully the world. We wanted to gather a bunch of beverage professionals, whether they were certified sommeliers or cicerones or longtime authors on beverage production. We got some of the top people in the world. We had a master sommelier there, Madeline Trefon. We had Randy Mosher, who wrote the book Tasting Beer and the book Designing Beers, and is known as the senior alchemist at his brewery because his understanding of taste and beverage production is just at the top of the world. And we had advanced sommeliers and advanced cicerones and certified sommeliers and certified cicerones. So all of these folks who have gone through a significant amount of training to taste and analyze beverages. And then we had a James Beard award-winning chef do a pairing dinner. So the judges judged multiple flights of mead. We had over 100 entries, and I'll get into the detail in a little bit, but the amount of analysis towards mead, professional analysis towards mead, so that meaderies could get the input of beverage professionals outside of the mead world so that we could see how mead was being received and choose the ones that were doing the best job and hold them up as a example for the world to see. That was really successful. And I can get into how we pulled that off and why we pulled that off in more detail in a little bit. But then this week, we've got a huge announcement, So 2 weeks ago was the U.S. Meat Open. This week, we're going into the Mead Institute's course on excellence in mead and quality assurance at UC Davis. And so we're going to have experts from around the country who are really at the top of their field talk about every aspect of mead production, from honey selection to water chemistry to yeast science and understanding how to select the best yeast for the meads you're trying to make, to fruit and bottling, filtration, all of these key components to making great mead will be gone to in a level of detail with a level of expertise that has never been focused on mead. And we did a lot of prep work beforehand, meeting with the presenters to get them to understand what mead makers want to know and tailor their presentations to the mead industry where it exists today and the challenges that a lot of mead makers face so that we can evolve to the next level.
That's pretty cool. Like, is the UC Davis stuff going to be online at all?
We're hoping we can get it recorded so that people can purchase the course. And getting that done is going to take a little bit of work because we literally just thought about it yesterday for the first time. And the course starts on Thursday and today is Wednesday. So, but I'm texting with Amina Harris, the director of the UC Davis Honey and Pollination Institute or Center. To figure out the logistics on that right now.
Oh, cool. And is it like a week long thing or just one day or?
It's Thursday to Sunday.
Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah. Well, Thursday night we get started with a open panel, with a number of experts in food and beverage talking about quality. What is quality? How does quality exist, in food and beverage? How do we arrive at quality? How do we know what it tastes like and feels like? And Ken Schramm, who wrote the book, The Complete Mead Maker, and co-founded the Mead Institute with me and his daughter, Allison Schramm-Nager, and then Pete Bocklich and Carvin Wilson, two really influential people in the mead world, are on the board with us. But Ken's going to be up on the panel with these experts talking about what makes excellence in food and beverage so that the philosophy of excellence and how it is achieved in food and beverage will be understood better. And like Amy Guittard from Guittard Chocolate will be there. Andy Waterhouse, the chair of Oenology and Viticulture from Davis, who's retiring now, but he's spent decades focusing on the science of great winemaking, is going to be on the board. Randy Mosher, who developed the Cicerone program, which is like the beer judging and tasting professional program, he's going to be on the panel. So all of their perspectives. And I think we're going to have Daryl Cordy, who ran one of the first specialty markets in the country at in Sacramento and has done it for like four decades now. And he really embraces that question of, you know, how do you make high quality accessible?
Yeah.
And how do you know what it is and how do you market it? How do you define it? So it's a really exciting opening panel that we're going to get into on Thursday night. And then Friday, we're going to move all into honey. It's going to be basically the whole day on honey.
Oh, wow.
And, okay. Yeah, we're going to be tasting varietal honeys. We're going to be learning from Joy Schlachter from Crockett Honey, whose job is honey quality assurance at a large, medium-sized packer. They're not one of the biggest, but they're in the top echelon of the medium-sized packers. And her job is to go to different honey providers and ensure that the honey that they're selling is quality and figure out how to get it consistent from the suppliers, given that, you know, honey varies from season to season, place to place, but her clients who buy from her need to have certain consistency. And so she's going to talk about the testing that she uses and expects from her suppliers and what we mead makers can use and expect from our suppliers.
Yeah, my mind, it's interesting because to me, that must be a really hard job in the sense that I can't imagine. I bring it back to coffee, and there's like a whole Q grading course for coffee that's done by the CQI, and it's like it sets all the standards essentially. Just the
Coffee Quality Institute.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And so for her, at least I don't know of a honey quality institute that sets the standards for honey at all. So for her, it has to be like a journey to like assess. Like she's just. I'm sure she's tasting a lot of honey and she knows what she's doing, but in order to make those quality judgment calls, I think would be difficult in a landscape where like there is no base.
I mean, we had this prep call with her a few weeks ago, and her knowledge and comfort talking about all those things is self-evident. And what's practical and what's theoretical right now and what's developing and how you navigate that whole unsteady reality.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. So, I mean, I really look forward to that lecture and learning how we can download those technologies that she uses so that we can interface with our honey suppliers clearly and develop more honey suppliers in the future.
Yeah.
And also as we roll out our apiary, test our honey to communicate its quality and value.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the honey day. Then the next day we're going to, and this is loose. I mean, I had to work with the presenters and their schedules. So I'm kind of talking from a big picture, what the topics are going to be. It might actually vary in order to accommodate everyone's schedules. But the next day is kind of all the additional pieces, water, fruit, spices, yeast. Then we've got packaging and filtration, and then a judging panel. So all of those things are going to fill in on the next 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. And there's a lot in those, right?
Like yeah.
Water, chemistry. We're talking with Dr. Fox, the chair of brewing science at UC Davis, about what we know about water chemistry, how it affects mouthfeel, balance, crispness, all these things. And then processes to developing your water profile, right? Your water chemistry profile. With yeast, we're going to talk with Dr. Linda Basson, who's retired from UC Davis now, but she's a genius. And her knowledge about yeast is just like mind-blowing, and her passion for it is totally infectious. And she's going to dial in how, you know, looking at the huge amount of yeast that are available, like 400 different commercially available yeasts or something, how does a mead maker look at that list of potential yeasts and find the yeasts that are going to work with the honey that they have chosen to arrive at the style endpoint they desire. And some basic tests you can do at a small level to filter your compatibility of honey and yeast. And then some trials you can do scaling up that make sure you're not, or help you limit the risk of going, you know, having a batch that arrives at an endpoint totally unintended. Yeah. And then, so water, yeast, fruit. Ken Schramm is going to give the lecture on fruit and how selecting fruit is best done, which is going to be, I think, mind-blowing, because if there's one person in the world who knows how to select fruit for mead making, it's that guy. Herbs and spices, we're going to have the Kinkles from Akira Font Meadery up in Whidbey Island, Washington, talk about selecting herbs and spices and working with the FDA on generally recognized as safe compliance. So legally in mead making, you have to get a formula approved if you make a mead other than honey, water, yeast, and like a little bit of hops. If you make a simple mead, a traditional mead that way, you don't have to get the formula approved by the TTB. But if you add anything else, and then you want to sell it in interstate commerce, you're required to get the formula approved. And to get that formula approved, you can only use ingredients that are on the generally recognized as safe FDA list.
Got it.
But they've been able to get things through, or like have some kind of strategy. And I'm really looking forward to learning that from them. Yeah, that aren't necessarily on that list. And one of the biggest ones is gesho, which is a traditional ingredient in Ethiopian and Eritrean and, you know, Somalian mead making.
Mm-hmm.
Do Somalians actually make mead? I just grouped them in the Horn of Africa, and I assume that they do, but I don't know that firsthand.
I'm sure some Somalians make mead.
Okay. All right.
But I'm willing to bet a whole population does not make mead.
Ethiopia and Eritrea has a solid mead making tradition, and Gesho is a big part of it. And Gesho is not generally recognized as safe. And we've talked to some experts who consult and advise and help people get ingredients recognized as safe. And it costs like $30,000 to $50,000 to $200,000,
jeez,
depending on what the situation is. Jeez. So if we could figure out another solution to that, that would be cool, because there's like a bunch of mead makers who want to go commercial and sell Ethiopian mead, and they can't if they use Gesho right now. So that's kind of sad.
Yeah, that's pretty cool though, that like they would be the people to talk to about it, essentially, right?
But yeah, the Kinkles are the people to talk to about navigating the generally recognized as safe complexity. Yeah. So we've got yeast, or we got water, we got yeast, we got fruit, we got herbs and spices. We're also going to have a recipe formulation, recipe development lecture by the guy that won the gold medal at the US Meat Open, Billy Belts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's super exciting. We had lined up the speakers before the competition, and you know, the competition was blind and like no one was involved in who, you know, in influencing anybody, but it was kind of self-evident that Billy is very good at making recipes. He had two entries in the final round.
Oh, wow.
Of judging. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it'll be really great to learn from and listen to him about developing formulas. Yeah. So we've got those five lectures. Then Dr. Block, he said I can call him Dave now, but
wow,
I know I met him 5 years ago and he was Dr. Block, and he's a brilliant man. He studies oenology, flavor chemistry, and aging, all these cool aspects of winemaking that are rarely understood. And at first he was kind of like, okay, I'll help out the mead people, but now he's pretty into mead. Oh, and like, nice. Good mead has made him be like, oh, this is beautiful and fun and interesting. So he's going to be talking about filtration and packaging technology. So everything from cork versus screw cap to can and kegs, and the trade-offs between all of these different technologies, some of the practicality of them, appropriate choices for the scale that you're at, even some shelf reception studies that, like, you know, what you put your bottle or what you put your liquid in, the bottle, the label, the closure, that all conveys value to some extent.
Yeah.
And so there's data on consumer reaction to those things. And he's going to present on that, which is going to be cool. And then a crash course in filtration. It's really a topic in and of itself, but to give people more awareness about what filtration means.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
That is how filtration is some days. Yes.
Well, that's pretty cool. And then, so we got the UC Davis course going. Mm-hmm. That's hopefully on video.
Mm.
And then
there's going to be some more. We're going to have a mead mixer at Z Specialty Food, which is a honey packer and event venue that's all about honey. Oh. And they have a mead bar and a restaurant.
Oh,
so that'll be cool. That'll be fun. People will be able to bring their own meads. We're going to have a closing tasting on Sunday where we're going to taste some excellent examples of wine, beer, spirits, and mead, so that people and some comparisons that are like, okay, so people will really see the difference between the producers that like are really intentional with each step and each ingredient and each process, and then the producers that are like, well, we're just trying to hit a price point and you know a reasonable end state here.
Yeah.
So it should be a one-of-a-kind course, super valuable. Hopefully we can get it recorded and share that value with people going forward and really up level the meat industry.
Yeah. It sounds awesome.
Thanks, man.
I think, yeah, it would be great for like improving quality and like pushing the meat industry forward, in my opinion.
Totally.
And another big thing is you guys moved Mead Day.
Yeah. So moving Mead Day from the very hot and almost intolerable first Saturday of August which the Brewers Association established like 20 years ago to help sell Ken Shram's book, okay, The Complete Mead Maker, to the first Saturday in October, which will be cooler. It'll allow meaderies to ship meads in cooler times of the year so that they don't have to worry about their meads spoiling in transit to their customers to celebrate Mead Day. It'll allow people at home to make mead without sweating and getting uncomfortable and getting heat stroke. One time I went to this mead day out in like El Cajon in, or La Mesa here in San Diego County, and it was like 103 degrees. And we were all just like, oh man, we're drinking and making mead and it's 103 degrees. Why are we doing this to ourselves?
Yeah, that's miserable.
Not so fun. So we're very excited about this switch, and there's a bunch of meaderies on board who are supporting it, and American Mead Makers Association is supporting it. And it's good to have a united front to help the mead industry move to a more kind of temperate and quality focused Mead Day date, the first Saturday of October, which I think is the 6th this year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So not only do we get Halloween in October, we get
Mead Day. That's right. That's right.
All
right.
That's exciting.
Yeah, man.
But to bring it back to the open, the Mead Institute's first quality driven tasting, that competition that has medals and everything.
Yeah.
I think
we have stickers.
Stickers.
Yes. Yes. You get to put a stamp on your bottle, on your label. Mead Institute 90 points plus.
Oh, nice.
If you got 90 points plus from your judges, or you get to put gold, you know, bronze, silver, or gold if you finish third, second, or first.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. So, and then you'll be on the website. So, hopefully, your job selling to establishments that want quality beverages will be a cinch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, talk to me about how the open format works.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Yeah, so instead of a traditional mead competition, which is judged by categories, right? You submit your meads based off of their strength, sweetness, and style.
Okay.
And then all the entries get broken out into, okay, here's a traditional semi-sweet standard strength mead. It'll compete with all the other traditional semi-sweet standard strength meads. And then your Melomels compete with the other Melomels, and your Methaclins compete with Methaclins, and da-da-da-da, right? Pimans and sizers, and
it's all separated.
Yeah. And in the U.S. Mead Open, it was randomized.
Oh, okay.
They all got all the entries got a random number and then put into a flight with one another. And
so all the styles were pitted against each other.
Yeah. Like there was a braggot, or it wasn't even a braggot, it was a caramelized, a Bochet.
Okay.
Versus like a full-on intense piment, you know, red fruit, and then a Methaglen and a dry sparkling mead, and they were all in one flight together. It was.
Sorry, I want to back up here just because a technicality came into my head. Was there a defined standard for the mead entered? So like,
it needed to be high quality.
Well, basically. No, I guess like, can someone do like 75% fruit juice with 25% honey.
Yes. There was a whole list, and no, they can't do that.
Okay.
51% of fermentable sugars or more needed to come from honey.
Oh, so it doesn't matter the style. It had to be 51% at minimum honey.
Yep.
And the other 49% could be whatever.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
But that's like the Mead Institute's number one definition. Okay. Is that a mead is made with fermentable sugars derived from honey to the tune of 51% or more.
Got it. Okay. So at the base, 51% of all the beverages were at least made from honey.
Well, 100% of all the beverages were made from 51% honey.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure.
Syntax. Yeah. So all the meads were randomized, pitted against each other in flights of 7 or 8 for the first round.
Okay.
And we had judges from mostly the Midwest, but they're all beverage professionals, either certified sommeliers and cicerones, advanced sommeliers and cicerones, or one master sommelier. Which, do you know about master sommeliers?
Yeah, like isn't that's like the level 7 one where they can like they can drink a wine and tell you where it's from, essentially, is my understanding
exactly.
of a master sommelier.
And what kind of grapes it is.
And there's like only like 150 in the world or something, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Because they're insane.
Yeah, they're like human computers. Yeah. They're like, here, have a drop of this. Oh, I will tell you all about it. Yeah, it's amazing. So Madeline Trifon was our master sommelier, and she's a really wonderful lady. And she gave an opening talk about, you know, her goal is to really understand quality so that when she tastes something, she can talk about it accurately and share with people, the folks that are doing the work to make really great things, which was really cool to hear. And then Randy Mosher was there too, who's this just wizard in the brewing world. He wrote the book Tasting Beer, which is kind of considered a cornerstone book on taking beer from, you know, oh, it's cold, it's wet, it's tasty, to like, oh no, this can be a nuanced, beautiful, delicious, multi-layered experience. So not a master cicerone technically, but within the community he's highly regarded as one of the gurus, one of the great knowers of things. Yeah,
so has a lot of experience and knowledge in tasting.
Yeah, and finding things that are really well made.
Another thing that I want to clear up in my head is, like, was this all done behind doors, or was it like an event that like people could come to? Like, how did it happen, I guess?
Yeah, so there were 35 people involved.
Okay.
Yeah, about 15 on the organizational staff and then 20 on the judging team.
Okay, and you guys all just got together and did it all in person?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And like, was it recorded or it was just done like all on your own?
So we did it at Shram's Orchard. They didn't enter anything in the competition.
Okay.
And we showed up in Rochester Hills, Michigan, at the Shram Orchard, which is a beautiful, I think, 5-acre property in the northern part of the Detroit area, and about 35, 40 minutes from Detroit. And we set everything up so that the judging would happen in this one room, the tabulation would happen in another room, and then all the logistics and management would happen, and the food making would happen in the back room. And the judges showed up on time. We got breakfast served and had the opening lecture, and then boom, they were sitting down and working. And it was amazing to witness these teams of judges use the Mead Institute mead evaluation and tasting grid to move through each mead and write just copious notes, which every meadery is going to get. These sheets are an incredible tool that I think every meadery, when they receive theirs, are going to see so much value in, no matter what score they got. It's going to be this snapshot of how their mead was received by professionals, beverage professionals outside of the mead bubble, which, you know, are the people we sell to when we're selling to restaurants, selling to grocery stores, selling to bottle shops, right? It's these people who know a thing or two about alcohol and are going to assess what they're being pitched in their own terms,
yeah,
not in mead nerd terms. So hopefully these sheets, which I watched these judges, I mean, my instruction was to be mostly in the back and help out as much as possible, so I didn't like sit there and eavesdrop on anyone, but I just saw so much deliberate focus. And that was one of Ken's favorite parts of the whole experience, was Ken Schramm, you know, who's committed a large portion of his professional life to mead. He was like, to have that amount of computational power focused on mead and what good mead is, and appreciating the good aspects and giving feedback to the aspects that could be improved, was priceless and kind of like a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a group of like 20-ish people who like are at a high level end of their game, and they're focusing on all these different meads, it's like a good start to like a process of improving the whole mead game.
Exactly. Exactly. And the meads that came out of it, I got to taste them all at the tasting at the end, and they were rich and complex and balanced and delicious. I mean, it was really awesome to see that the process arrived at these six meads that made it to the finals, and then these top three meads. It was interesting to note that all top three meads were kind of red, fruited, intense, somewhat tannic. But the honey note is present in them meads. So that was interesting to note. And I think there's some discussion about breaking out from traditionals from adjuncted meads, but we're gonna cross that bridge once the UC Davis course is underneath our belts.
That's fair. Yeah. So like what kind of red fruits are we talking about here? Like
currants and strong currant. Damnation, I think, is a combination of berries. And then Wolf the Dawning from from Lost Cause is I don't even remember. But I think it's raspberries.
Raspberries.
And blackberries. And there's like chipotle in there as well.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
One traditional did make it to the final round, which is Hydran Meadery's Lahua Blossom. Lost Cause had two in the final round. Their Amaro, which is amazing. That's like the most complex and multi-layered thing. And then
was Moonlight, that red fruit too or different?
No, it's like 27 different herbs and spices. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's crazy. Whoa. They had to apply for a formula and label exemption so that they couldn't sell it out of state. It's only available in California because of that whole generally recognized as safe thing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then Moonlight Meadery Desire is a beautiful multi-berry mead as well. So like four out of six of the finalists were multi-berry, and all three of the top three were, you know, red fruit meads, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But Ebauchet made it into the semifinals. Earl Grey Kumquats, that's really good. It's a methylglen melomel, like a spiced mead, fruit mead blend from McGee's Mead, which is a super small producer. Yeah, it's cool to see how it all shook out. You know, Song of the Elders from Hierophant, this is a really cool spruce mead that is, I really enjoyed it. This Tupelo Reserve from Zymerium is a traditional, just made with with Tupelo honey.
Oh, wow.
And it's a rich symphony of flavors. So it's like the folks that made it to the semifinals are doing it right. You know, you make it to the final, the Sweet 16 in basketball, right? And it's like, okay, you're really good. And like, yeah, it's kind of the way it broke is like a question. And then all these 90 point pluses will hopefully have a much more easy time selling their stuff in the market.
Yeah. That's super cool.
It's really exciting. Yeah.
It's like the first like big thing that the Mead Institute has put on that like really moves the vision of the Mead Institute forward, I think. Right.
Absolutely.
And like, I know you guys have been working really hard with it for a long time, and it's like a rewarding thing to actually see it come to fruition.
And it's something we can do every year, and hopefully it'll grow and we'll refine the process a little bit. But we're really, really excited for what the future holds with it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Is there anything else you like really want to talk about when it comes to the competition? Like who it was involved or?
Oh, yeah. Just... Let's talk about this dinner.
The dinner? Oh, the food dinner.
Yeah.
Because I was, pairing it with food. Did that go into the final score?
Well, no. There were pairing recommendations on every sheet, which I think will be super valuable. But we got the opportunity to work with Chef Jimmy Schmidt, who's a James Beard Award-winning chef, which, you know, James Beard Awards are like the Oscars of the food industry, right? Like, huge deal.
Yeah.
And this guy's super cool. He took three meads that were kind of Mead Institute selections and then paired meals with each one.
Oh, wow.
Or courses with each one. And Golden Coast Mead got selected for the seafood course. And he did our wildflower sour with scallops and fennel pollen. and crystallized ginger.
Whoa.
And this course was like euphoric. Like I wanted everyone to just stop talking and just focus on what was happening in front of them, because like the contrast of the richness of the scallops, the wild florality of the fennel and the fennel pollen, which I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Leave it to a chef.
Yeah. And then the tart florality of the wildfire sour contrasting with that richness and that florality of the scallops just was this cycle of just like immersive flavor experience that if I had been in a more quiet spot would have resulted in a transformational experience. And it's still with me, I mean, to some extent. So I highly recommend checking out Chef Jimmy Schmidt and his restaurant and catering services, and staying tuned to Mead Institute events. There's a chance that on the new Mead Day, the first Saturday in October, Schramm's Orchard will be hosting another mead pairing dinner with Chef Jimmy Schmidt.
Oh, cool.
So if people are into it, they can stay tuned, and we'll be advertising tickets for that through our Golden Coast Mead email list, which you can join if you go to our website, goldencoastmead.com, and scroll down to the bottom and join, subscribe to the email list.
So what were the other meads that were paired with food? Was it like you got to choose which course you want, or did you get to try all three?
You got to try all three.
Okay.
Yeah. The first course was mussels, and was it mussels? Nope. Oysters and a session mead from St. Ambrose Cellars, what's the name of their mead? I don't remember. But we were standing at that point, so the focus wasn't quite as honed in as it was on the second course, which was the scallops. And then the third course was prime rib, just done perfectly. Like you touch it with your fork and it falls apart. And then you put it in your mouth and it just dissolves. It's amazing. And this mead from Schramm's called Smile of Fortune, which is a multi-berry mead that is like perfect. It's just, I mean, it's sweet and rich and thick and higher ABV, but a sip of it is just this explosion of flavors. And they use orange blossom honey and I think raspberries, blackberries, and currants.
Oh, wow.
And like the rich, sweet, tart, tannic alcohol of this very intense mead paired with this rich, totally umami prime rib was like, again, game over. Like, stop talking, go all the way into your body and feel the bliss of your body being like, yes, 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 yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So was that just like after a long day's
work? 2 days work. We like swarmed it for 2 days. Yeah. The day of the fest and the day before, or of the event and the day before.
Got it.
It was like, go, go, go.
And all the judges got to have the dinner. It was just like one final hurrah for everyone.
Yeah. And it was a way to thank the judges for their time and work judging the competition to serve them this amazing meal.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, pairing. I think always pairing a liquid with food is like in a realm of its own almost, mm-hmm. where like it always takes it to another level, where like as someone who can just appreciate a drink, it's awesome to appreciate a drink, but like getting the full experience with food and a meal, it like always
grounds it and bodies it. Yeah.
Yeah. It always just like takes it to the next level.
Mm.
And that's so cool that you guys like got the chef to come in. How did that process work? Did you guys like just give him the mead and say, figure out a food that works? Or did you guys like taste it with him?
He was a really close connection with the Schramm's.
Oh, okay.
So well before, I think 6 weeks before the event, we sent him our meads that we wanted him to pair, and then he tasted them. And then after he served the meals, he came out and talked about how the meads spoke to him.
Oh, okay.
What they wanted him to, which is like pretty esoteric mystical language, right? Like, really, the drinks talk to you, huh? Like, I can identify with that, but I'm uncomfortable talking about that in public. But it was cool. It was empowering to hear him say that.
I mean, welcome to the life of chefs and tasters, I guess, but.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was a passionate man. He's not like a big guy in any means, but his focus and his capacity really speak volumes for him, you know? And he was like, well, this is what they were saying to me. So that's the direction I took it from the food production. I was hoping that these aspects would compare and contrast and add to, like, help create a beautiful experience for you all. And we were all like, mission accomplished, man. Wonderful work.
That's awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So after all is said and done, is there anything you guys want to do better next year? Or were there any hiccups that, like, happened that, like, you guys want to improve upon?
Yeah, we're still working through that. The big themes are, let's grow it. We can do more. We can get more entries. We can provide more feedback. Hopefully we can get, you know, more 90 point meads into the marketplace. But of course the mead quality has to be there, but I think it's going that direction. I know we at Golden Coast Mead have learned a lot, like, in just witnessing the meads that won. And we haven't gotten our sheets yet, but knowing that some of the feedback in general from the judges about balance and what makes a good traditional really palatable, and the light florality, like, can we pull that off better? That's kind of the big takeaway that we've taken without having our evaluation and score sheets back and getting the specific feedback. We're excited about finding the process that's going to really express the lighter florality of the honey, which, you know, it's a little challenging because our Brazilian organic honey is more dark and caramely. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also, like, our customers love those meads. We just surveyed our customers, and the Wildflower Sour and the Wildflower Dry are two of our top meads within the folks who responded to our survey. So those might be our most ardent supporters. But anyways, it's going in the weeds. Mead Institute wants to grow the competition. We want to refine some processes, the randomization. We've got to have a little bit of, like, Carvin, who's the judging director and is a software programmer, said, you know, with randomization, you got to have some human in there, because some dynamics can happen where what you intended wasn't. So that's a lesson learned. There's going to be discussion about breaking out traditionals, and I don't know how I feel about it, but what's really cool is that the five people on the board at the Mead Institute, like, love mead so much and are technically experts. You know, they really understand the complexity of making great mead and the difficulty in marketing it. So I'm confident that the discussion is going to lead to a decision that really optimizes those potentially competing interests.
Okay, can you talk more to that in the sense that, like, it was the first open format, so traditionals got thrown in with everything else. You guys are having a discussion about maybe separating out traditionals and having its own thing?
It was literally, like, a couple sentences in our debrief. You know, yes, there are expert violinists who can captivate an audience the way that a symphony can, but, like, a symphony can stop a crowd of people dead in their tracks. Whereas a solo violinist just playing on the street corner, it's probably just going to stop a little handful of people, right? It's like a intensity question.
Yeah.
So how do we moderate for that without going the normal mead course?
Fair enough.
Because, like, after 8 tastes of things, and they're spitting, like, these are professional judges. They're not swallowing and getting drunk halfway through the flight.
Yeah.
You know? But your palate fatigues.
Yeah.
And there's training to overcome that. But it's interesting to note that the top 3 were red fruit, intense, high tannin, high acid, higher alcohol meats.
Yeah. It's a hard thing, in my opinion, because ultimately it comes back to, if you're separating out traditionals, the question ultimately comes, well, why not separate everything else?
Exactly. Like,
it's
exactly.
traditionally done.
Yeah.
Like piments versus piments and all that stuff. So it's kind of like, why is traditional so special and everything else isn't?
And maybe that's where, you know, the Mazer Cup and the Mead Institute are just different. And if you're looking for traditional, excellent examples of traditionals, go to Mazer Cup. And if you're looking for the meads that are going to be the easiest to sell and the meads that are going to land the hardest and the fastest with the largest number of consumers per these professionals, go to the Mead Institute and look at that list.
Yeah. Or even separate. There's a lot of potential solutions, I guess, but the first thing that comes to my mind is just separating it out into different competitions. And so every 6 months you have
one and then the other.
Yeah. So you have two competitions a year, one's for traditionals, one's for the other. And
that's an interesting idea, like traditional open and then other open.
Yeah. And that way it's kind of like, if you have traditionals you want to showcase, you do it in that one. And then all the other ones are in another one. But
I love that idea. Like maybe the spring could be the traditionals and like focus on florality and like that kind of lighter, brighter coming out of winter. And then the fall could be other and like going into winter and those kind of intense more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another
cool idea.
It's also like, it's also completely viable to like, okay, this year, yeah, the top three were all red fruit meads. Like, let's give it a couple more years. Maybe next year, it's different.
We split it out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe like, maybe
a few
like
iterations.
It's like maybe next year, only one of the top three and maybe something else comes through. Like just get more data and know you can pivot with more data essentially that align with what you guys want to do. But
love that.
The way I think about it too, is like traditional coffee, like just black coffee. Like there's no way if you pit black coffee against flavored coffee or coffee with milk, in my head, those are two completely different things. Like you can't, I can't just like a latte versus just pure espresso. It's just kind of like, it would be hard to be like, put it all together, I guess.
And that was kind of part of the organizing principle of this competition, is like the marketplace is a messy, relatively disorganized place.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have a competition that kind of reflected that and what jumped out, you know, like NCAA March Madness.
Yeah. Just put it all together.
Yeah. And then what, the last two are the last two and the one that wins is the best for the year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of like, the longer it goes on and the more data you get, you got better decisions can be made, because ultimately if the data is saying like Mellow Mills and Mefflin's and that stuff is winning the comps, people are going to purposefully be brewing and entering those because that's what's giving them their best chance to win the comp,
right?
Essentially.
Right.
And
that is something that's really unique about mead, right? Like wine grapes, you don't add honey and spices, right? Like mead is this huge umbrella that enables so much creativity and then delivers, like what we're drinking right now, this is masala chai, right? And it has salt in it and chipotle peppers and cubeb berries and kefir lime in it. And it's like this drink that is a cocktail might get close, but it wouldn't be this smooth and round and full bodied, right? Like a cocktail is like a more, if this was a cocktail, it'd be like this refreshing, like almost, I don't know, soda-y thing, right? Whereas this is like this integrated, complex, multi-layered thing, and drinking it is fun on a level that drinking a cocktail would just be, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's something that's the beauty of mead. And another idea that just came to my head, I'm just spitballing ideas now for you, but in the coffee competition, you have 15 minutes and you have to do your espresso drink. So it's just espresso. Then you have to do a milk-based drink with espresso, and then you can do any drink you want, any creative drink.
That's cool.
So it'd be interesting to do a mead competition where it's like, you have to submit a traditional, you have to submit A melomel. And then the third mead you submit can be whatever you want.
Whoa, that's a cool idea.
And so you taste them in pairs. So you taste someone's submission and all three of theirs, and then you get a final score.
Or sets.
Yeah. And so ultimately, that way you're able to more
broadly assess technical capacity.
Yeah, someone's ability to like not only do traditionals or not only do mellow mills, but to do mead as it is.
I love that idea, man. That is brilliant.
But I'm just stealing it from coffee. But anyway,
no, well, just dude, like... that's one of the reasons I love talking to you about this stuff. Is like you obviously care about quality, and you obviously care about delivering people something beautiful and accessible and good. And to trade these ideas with you, and then like that, I could see the whole team being like, "Oh, that's complicated," but it would really separate the folks who are really committed
to making higher quality meat
across the board.
Yeah. And
they deserve to be recognized.
Yeah. And like that can be wrapped up. Like there could be two different rewards. Like there could be like
the single entry,
like the gold, best. Silver, yeah. Bronze. But then there could be like a more overarching reward for that too, where it's kind of like
the bronze. Yeah. The producer's award versus the product award.
Yeah. And so, it's just
best actor versus best picture.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it's just, I think there's ultimately in my mind, I think it's really cool that the ball has gotten started, and like you've started the learning process and you started the data collecting process, and like it can only be better. And like, I think that's awesome. And that's something the meat industry really needs.
Amen, bro. Thank you, man. Well, it's a pleasure to talk about with you, and really grateful to do this podcast with you. And to the folks in the audience, thank you for tuning in. If there's anything we can do to serve you better or anything you want us to talk about, email us at admin@goldencoastmead.com. That's admin@goldencoastmead.com. Or you can hit us up on our socials. We definitely pay attention to those and talk about them every week at our marketing and sales meetings. So that's Instagram, Golden Coast Mead, Facebook, Golden Coast Mead. We're going to start moving our Facebook towards promoting events, and our Instagram towards, you know, really visual content. And then Twitter, we are getting more active on Twitter too. So if any of you are out there in the Twitter world and want to hit us up on Twitter, we're at Golden Coast Mead as well. So stoked to have you all tuning in. You're all across the world. It's pretty crazy to look at the stats and see people in Australia and Sweden and Cambodia.
Shout out to Romania.
Brazil, Japan. It's crazy, man. There's mead people tuning in all over the world. So thank you all very much for joining us, and let us know what you'd like to hear about in the future. We'll be shooting a podcast out once a month or so.
Yeah. Thank you. We appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
Super grateful.
Thank you, Brandon.
Cheers.
Oh no, he's empty. He's got a sip left. Get him some more mead. There it goes. All right.
Cheers. Cheers. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, that's a wrap on the Mead Institute and the Mead Competition. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. We appreciate all the support we can get. If there's anything you'd like to know more about, feel free to email us at admin@goldencoastmead.com with your questions, and we'll do our best to answer them for you. Now here's your weekly bee joke. Why do bees have sticky hair? Because they use honeycombs. Mead out.